Hello and welcome to another episode of Grumpy Old Gay Men and Their Dogs. It is day 10 here in the Zen Room, episode 104. And my name is Patrick Finn, and I am here with the unscrupulous Tommy Gibbons.
Hi, bitches.
And how are you this evening, Tommy?
I'm okay, thank you.
Just okay?
I'm just okay.
Just okay?
Just okay. I'm on this side of the ground.
That's always a good thing.
Awake and not crying.
That's even a better thing.
So, yeah. Can't ask for more than that.
No, you can. Well, you can, but...
Well, yeah.
Don't be greedy.
Yeah. I'm not in, like, a trench in Iraq or a mud hut in Africa.
So, yeah, this is very true.
I have no right.
Thank heavens for that.
Yeah. So what's up with you?
Me? I'm nothing. I just celebrated my 62nd birthday yesterday.
62nd?
Yes. 62 years on this planet.
I thought you were more like 65, 68.
No, we ain't there yet. Don't rush things.
Huh. Because I thought you were 10 years older than Steven, and Steven is like 3 years older than me.
Well, I'm not. Actually, I'm 9 years older than Steven.
Oh.
Yeah, he was born in 1970, and I was born in 62, but he was born in December of 70, so that's why it's like 9 years.
Okay.
Something like that.
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Happy birthday.
Thank
62,
you.
62.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, I can't believe it either.
100 years ago, you'd be dead.
I'm still alive now.
Okay. All right.
If I make it to 70, that's my goal right now, is to make it to 70. After that, we'll see what happens.
70 is a goal.
70 is a goal.
I told the shrink, who eventually ended up ghosting me, that 70 was a failure.
Why?
Because I can't imagine any reason for me to live that long.
Why not?
Because I don't have children. I don't have a legacy. I don't have... Well, what? There's no reason for me really to be around that long.
Why not? Enjoy life.
I just said it.
You can still enjoy life at age 70.
We're not going to die. This is really not how we should start this podcast. It's about like... Why I don't know.
Well, you're the one who brought it up about 70 being a failure.
I was trying to tell a lighthearted story.
Well, that doesn't sound very lighthearted.
Well, it related to what you were saying. And, all right, so I'm sorry. I'll keep my stories closer to the vest.
Yeah, sure you will.
I'll try.
Anyway, before we go into our regular segments, we just got some breaking news for us anyway.
Tick, tickety, tick, tickety, tick, tickety.
Yes, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie has dropped out of the Republican primary election race.
I think we have to, like, set rules on what breaking news is.
Well, we just found out about it, like,
But
20 minutes ago.
Is it important enough to bring up at the beginning and, like, interrupt the flow of things?
Yeah, it's okay to bring up right now.
Chris Christie?
Yeah, I think it's an important thing. Especially when he basically said, hey, no one in the Republican Party is listening to me. You know, they'd rather hear the lies of Trump than the truth from him.
I think he knew that going in. I think that was his point. I think he never expected to get the nomination.
He wanted to be the anti-Trump.
He was going to get as close as he could, being as loud as he felt he needed to be.
Yep.
And it's like he threw himself on the knife.
Yeah.
It was a really big knife because... Yeah. Wow. But yeah, I gotta respect that. I don't like his politics. I don't like the man himself.
No.
He was
a bully when he was a governor of New Jersey.
He's much like Donald Trump.
In a lot of ways, yeah.
Without
the fascist element.
That sort of New York, New Jersey arrogant guy.
Yeah.
Straight guy thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
But I give him credit for trying to knock Trump off the pedestal a bit, you know? Because he's the only Republican out there who is, really. The ones who are running for president, he's the only one who's knocking Trump. The other ones won't touch him.
No. And it's now it's... he couldn't have expected anything else. I think he went out there knowing he was going to not go as far. He only spent X amount of dollars. He didn't go lunacy. He wanted to spread this gospel.
Yeah.
He wanted to make the noise and let people know. And he went as far as he could with the resources that he was willing to spend. And that's good for Chris Christie.
Yeah. Just a shame that Republican voters aren't getting his message. You know?
The way as fast as things happen and as quickly as situations change, there's still 11 months before anything.
Of course, a lot can happen in 11 months.
And you know? Especially in the environment we're in now, where things happen
so quickly.
So quick.
And reported so quickly.
Results, you know, like she said this and she immediately replied, and wait, hold on. Back in the day,
yeah,
if she said that, you know, they would have to be like a phone call to spread the news. Some, you know, it took time to spread news.
Yeah.
Even if it was only just a phone call, but now it's just like,
I know,
everything, everywhere.
Right?
It's crazy. And I still haven't found my Karen. I fell into, I could use this in a topic.
Okay, save it for a topic. Yeah, no, save it for a topic.
Okay, go ahead. You pick up something.
Okay. Well, after Chris Christie, I was going to talk about the House Oversight Committee meeting today they had, in which Hunter Biden showed up, and the whole meeting turned into a fiasco. Everyone's attacking each other and fighting with each other.
I thought I knew, but evidently I didn't. All of the details. The Oversight Committee was meeting about Hunter Biden?
Yes, because they're considering holding him in contempt of Congress.
Because he did.
Because he refuses to testify in a private deposition.
Right.
He said he will only testify in a public hearing.
Deposition. So he pulled a stunt. The stunt was showing up to be in the gallery.
When this hearing started.
While the hearing is starting.
Yeah.
And then as soon as Marjorie Taylor Greene's turn to speak,
he got up and left.
He got up and walked out of the room.
Because she's the one who displayed the dick pics of him in Congress at a previous hearing.
Right. Okay.
But I was watching clips of this hearing. It's an embarrassment. This is what...
Tell me. We degenerated to.
It's just... I mean,
who's on the committee?
I don't remember who's all on the committee. I think that's one of the ironies on it is I think Congressman Jim Jordan is on it. The man who refused a subpoena from the January 6th committee was never punished for it. But no, now we're going to consider punishing Hunter Biden.
But the history of that is we could do a podcast about nothing but that for over and over again for 10 years and never repeat. The first thing that comes to mind is we can't or we shouldn't confirm a Supreme Court justice in an election year. In one election cycle,
and
in the next election cycle, they did exactly that.
Of course.
So there's examples of that kind of shit, like you were just
definitely
saying, endlessly.
Definitely.
Endlessly.
If you ever watch some clips of it today, it's amazing to watch. It's like, this is what we're degenerating into.
Yeah, I'm going to have to because you're no help at all. I mean, okay.
Well, if you don't mind, then we're going to go into our first segment.
She's gonna come. Well, that she was clear.
Yes.
No, the first thing she said, I couldn't. I'm trying to make out.
I wasn't trying to make out anything from that.
It's not important. I'm just trying to get through it.
But yes, welcome to Heavy Petting.
Heavy Petting.
And today we're going to talk about dog shelters.
Okay.
Because a report was put up by this group called Shelter Animals Count that compiles data from about 7,000 shelters nationwide.
And what did they find out?
They reported that there were more than 250,000 more animals in the shelter system than there were the year before.
And why do they say that is?
For various reasons, that people are giving up their pets because of the costs. If they're moving and they're moving into a community or a place where pets are not allowed in the residence.
Didn't you do something like this not too long ago? About
something similar.
Thing? Yeah.
Something similar, yes.
All right, so go ahead.
But like I said, the shelters are now being overwhelmed, where they have to like keep the dogs like in hallways and in cages and stuff, because they are running out of places to put them there.
All right, so what's happening?
Not a whole lot, you know. People just need to start going to shelters, I guess, more to adopt dogs instead of looking to buy new ones, you know?
Yeah. There was something about...
Because eventually, if they don't, these shelters may have to put some of these dogs down.
Yeah.
And that'd be a real tragedy, you know?
That's what they do, and it happens 100 times a day.
Yeah, right?
They're putting abandoned dogs down.
So, if you're out there and you're considering getting a dog, go to a shelter.
Korea just banned...
The eating of dog meat. South Korea did.
Production and eating of dog meat.
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
That was good news.
That was good news.
Yes, it was. I'm not sure how happy some of the South Koreans are about that.
But. Well, the pictures I saw, they were smiling.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I don't know how it fits into their culture. You know, if it's a highly sought after thing or...
I think it's been part of their cuisine for a long time.
Ah, so let them have a goat like everybody else.
But we now move on to our canine compendium, our dictionary of dogs.
I heard of a shelter that was celebrating being empty.
Really?
Yeah. I was surprised by that.
Wow.
It was Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Ohio, somewhere in there.
Well, that's kind of
spread
out.
You know, okay. It was like all the shelters are, the county shelter. It
yeah.
was like, you know, the... And they were empty. So, you know, of course, they have the staff and they take a picture along amongst all the... And by the time the picture's developed, there's more dogs. You know what I mean?
Right?
They didn't go as far as the dogs, but what they did say was that they were opening... They were going to nearby shelters to help them take some of their excess...
That's what they should be doing.
That's what
then.
They should
yeah.
be doing. Yeah, but it,
right?
was, it was cool that they had found themselves completely empty.
That is great.
And so
that's excellent news.
Yeah. So where are we in the dog alphabet?
We are now at the letter V.
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 V. V is a Veshla. Vishla. Vishla.
Yes, Vishla. The famous Vishla dog.
The Vishla. I think there's a Vishla. I think you see, you're laughing. There's Vishla, Victorian shit poodle. What do you got?
It's called the Valencian Terrier.
Valencian Terrier.
That's a picture of it right there.
Okay. All right. It looks like it's picking up cable TV. Those fucking ears.
Right.
God.
It,
he's hearing next week.
It's also known as the Ratonero Valenciano, which is English for Valencian rat hunting dog.
It's not English for anything. It's what language? Spanish?
Spanish. It originated in the southeast coastal region of Valencia in Spain sometime in the 16th century. It is used primarily to hunt rats, rabbits, and other small animals.
Do they have their own oranges?
Who, Valencia? Valencian oranges, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, it's not a name brand, it's like a... Like
it's from a place.
A
Valencian
breed.
Oranges.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
All right.
But anyway, the Valencian Terrier is about 12 to 16 inches tall, weighs about 10 to 15 pounds. The most common markings are tricolor, with the colors dominating the white portion of the coat. Other markings include black and tan.
Hold it.
Yes.
The other markings on the white of the coat.
Yes.
As opposed to where?
I don't
like,
know.
Should there be markings on the liver spots on, or there, should there be markings on the black part of the dog? I'm sorry, it seems to me an outside. Could you go to that dog on the side, that black and white dog?
This one right
yeah,
here?
Yeah, that looks like, yeah.
Okay.
Holy shit. Okay, keep going. Go on with yourself.
Also, most of them, their tails are docked.
Okay.
This one's unusual, as the tail was kept.
That tail is... its own separate animal.
Right.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it's quite a...
What'd they do? What was their job?
They were basically rodent hunters.
Rodent hunters.
Yep.
Okay.
Rats, rabbits.
Rat dogs. They're ratters.
Other right. small creatures.
Okay.
They're good looking dogs.
That's what I meant by shit poodle before. The Victorian shit poodle. I meant ratter. But I couldn't think of the word ratter.
Victorian shit poodle.
Shit poodle, yeah. Because in the Victorian days, you know.
Oh, my God. I got to remember that one. Victorian
needed,
shit poodle.
You needed the...
oh, my God.
The shit poodles to get rid of the mice. Because people are allergic to cats.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. All right.
Anyway, we now move on to our next segment.
Happy birthday.
Mm.
Many happy returns. A very happy birthday.
Yes, it's time for today's birthdays.
Okay.
And we only have one birthday today.
Okay. That's been the case recently.
I've been cutting them down a bit.
Quite a lot.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, there were other birthdays that occurred today, but I tried to pull some more significant ones.
Okay.
This is actually someone we've discussed before in the past. He was born January 10th, 1939 in the Bronx, the son of coffin makers. His father came from Sicily. His mother enrolled him in dancing and acting school at an early age. He had his first stage appearance in the Tennessee Williams play, The Rose Tattoo, in 1951.
Are you giving me some minio?
Yes, I am.
This
I didn't know. He also played the young prince opposite Yul Brynner in the stage musical of The King and I.
Yeah.
I did not know that. But of course, his breakthrough role was as Plato in the 1955 film Rebel Without a Cause, starring James Dean and Natalie Wood. Which, great movie.
Yeah.
Great classic movie.
And he is adorable.
Yeah.
And he's, yeah.
He received an Academy Award nomination for Best Supporting Actor for that role.
He was like dreamy.
And it was like, he was only 17 years old, and at that time, he was the fifth youngest nominee in Oscar history.
Really?
Yep. He later was nominated for...
He was 17?
17. Right? He was later nominated for a second Academy Award nomination for Best Supporting Actor for his role in the film Exodus in 1960. Another very good film.
I don't know.
Here was something I didn't know. There is a painting in the Guggenheim Museum. I really shouldn't call it a painting. It's a 9-panel canvas by an artist named Harold Stevenson called The New Adam. Was made in 1963. It's a mural that fills the room of a nude male. Sal Mineo was the model for that artist. Okay. I never knew that before. Okay. But unfortunately, by the early 60s, he was becoming too old to play the kind of roles he had played.
Well, it was, that happens to people.
That he was getting typecast as an Indian or as a Mexican.
Right. He was, olive complected.
His last
dark hair.
His last film role was in 1971 in the film Escape from the Planet of the Apes.
Okay.
Which is a generally bad film.
But he did a lot of onstage work.
Well, that's it. After that, he basically devoted his time to working on stage. He came out as bisexual in a 1972 interview. I did not know this. He was engaged to actress Jill Haworth, who was the original Sally Bowles in Cabaret on Broadway.
Right.
And supposedly, she canceled the engagement when she caught Mineo engaged in sex with another man.
Okay. I bet that was hot.
I bet it was, too. But on the night of February 12th, 1976, Mineo was returning home from a rehearsal for the play P.S. Your Cat Is Dead when he was stabbed in the heart by a mugger outside his Hollywood apartment. At the time of his death, he was in a 6-year relationship with a man named Courtney Burr, and he was buried at the Gate of Heaven Cemetery in Hawthorne, New York. That's in Westchester County. So that's the story of Sal Mineo.
Now, there was a play that he worked on for over very many years.
Okay.
And I think it was, there was a male rape scene in a jail. And
Fortune in Men's Eyes. That's the name of the play.
Was it Don Johnson?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
You're absolutely right about that.
Okay.
There's actually a film adaptation of that play.
Okay, so now, when people ask, why can't you remember, the days of the week?
Right.
How to tell time. It's because my head is filled with that information. Okay?
So you are a font of useless knowledge.
Not everybody knows that about Sal Mineo, but I...
Yes, you did. Fortune in Men's Eyes. Good call.
I knew that. He spent a lot of time on that
movie. Yeah. Good play. Good movie, anyway.
Right.
Bit dated now, but
was he in
good.
The movie?
No, he was not. No, afraid not. So, to Sal Mineo, we say...
Happy birthday!
Happy birthday, Sal Mineo!
I love you. He's so dreamy. He was so dreamy. Even, as he got older.
Yeah, he was still a good-looking man.
God.
Right?
Delicious. Just delicious.
Anyway, we now move on to our next segment.
And everybody should have somebody who looks at them the way he looked at James Dean. Bring out your
dead! Yes, it's time for Bring Out Your Dead.
Oh, who died?
We had two deaths this week.
No.
The first one occurred
Hold on. Okay, go ahead.
Well, they both occurred on the same day, on January 4th. The first one, she was born October 5th, 1923. She had a career spanning 8 decades on the stage and screen.
Oh, it was Madame Langfeld.
I'll see if you can find her real name. She was born in Pretoria, South Africa. Her first stage appearance was in 1931 at age 8. Her first film appearance was in 1938 at age 15. She was nominated for a Best Supporting Actress Oscar for the 1960 film The Sundowners. She won the Best Actress in a Musical Tony Award for her portrayal of Desiree Armfelt in the 1973 Broadway musical A Little Night Music. She's also known for playing the mother, the suffragette mother, in Mary Poppins.
That's exactly right. She was relentlessly happy and upbeat.
Yep. She was also in one of my favorite comedies with Danny Kaye called The Court Jester. She played the love interest in that. And she also memorably played Diane Chambers' mother on Cheers. I don't know if you remember that.
I don't remember that.
And one of my favorite Christmas movies, she appeared as the evil mother-in-law or mother in The Ref. Okay. With Dennis Leary and Kevin Spacey.
We've talked about this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. She's despicable in that movie. Oh, my God.
I could come up with two names, okay? And I know who this woman is.
I know you know who this woman is.
I could come up with Madame Armfelt.
Well, she played that role later on in a Los Angeles revival of the play. But she originally played Desiree Armfelt, for which she won the Tony Award.
Okay. Right.
Stuck on the name?
Yeah, I am.
Glynis Johns.
Glynis Johns, that bitch.
Well, here's a clip of her from Sending the Clowns. It's a clip of her from A Little Night Music, singing Sending the Clowns.
I love Sondheim's story about this.
Well, this was supposedly written with her in mind.
For a very particular reason. But go ahead.
Here we go. Glynis Johns.
He said that she had a sweet, light little voice, but she wasn't at all trained. So she didn't want to give her anything extended. No extended singing. So
yeah.
It was like short sentences. So what comes in short sentences? Questions. Questions come in short sentences. Don't you approve? Are we a pair?
Don't you agree?
Isn't it true? Don't you agree? And then but if you count along with it, she doesn't have more than three or four beats between each breath.
Yeah, that's it.
The whole song. And it's his biggest hit.
Yeah.
His biggest commercial.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. And she, like I said, she set the standard for it.
Well, she set the standard for it theatrically. I think if people who know that song from its popular releases, those people who sang it, Barbara Cook sang it.
Oh, yeah. Everyone in the world sang that song.
I think they would be surprised at this.
Yes, I agree. They probably would be too.
Yeah.
Because everyone thinks of it as some like
big soaring ballad.
Big ballad. And it's not that. It's a very small, quiet number when she's sitting with her lover, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a great scene.
Yeah.
Great, great music. I really enjoyed that.
I don't know that. That's one of the ones I know the least well.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know that. I don't know Merrily so good.
Oh, I love Merrily We Roll Along.
I do know Passion pretty good.
Yeah, that one I don't know as much.
And I know...
And Pacific Overtures.
Pacific Overtures. Go ahead, keep going.
Okay.
I also know Saturday Night more than a little bit.
Saturday Night, I love. Yeah. Love that show.
I wish somebody would produce it.
Right? I wish somebody would do that because it's such a good show.
Go ahead.
Anyway, our next decedent, he was born August 28th, 1943. His name was David Richard Solberg, born in Chicago.
David Sol.
David Sol is correct. He rose to prominence playing Detective Kenneth Hutch Hutchinson in the TV series Starsky and Hutch from 1975 to 1979.
Back when Saturday Night Live was funny, they did a sketch about, it was called Staircase and Hutch.
Really?
Yeah, and it was about a staircase and a large piece of furniture, like in somebody's living room, like a big staircase with a railing.
What I forgot was he was also on the series Here Come the Brides from 1968 to 1970.
Oh, yeah.
That's because Bobby Sherman was in that series and he got all the attention.
Okay.
Because he was the hot boy back then. But David Sol was also known for playing the lead in the 1970 TV movie of Salem's Lot. Did you see that?
I did see Salem's Lot.
That was actually pretty good, I thought. Not great, but it was pretty good.
I'm not sure if I can tell you what the plot is.
Basically about a vampire moving into town and slowly taking over the town.
Okay.
James Mason played his servant.
Who was the vampire?
I don't remember. He was all in makeup, some hideous thing.
Okay.
But also famously, David Sol starred in the 1983 series Casablanca.
Wow, talk about an
that ran for 10 episodes.
Yeah.
It's like, what were they thinking?
Oh, man. Well, it's one of those, this is either going to be genius or it's going to completely suck.
Yeah.
That's how I felt about Xanadu the Musical.
Wall Line provide.
About what?
Xanadu the Musical. It was either going to become a huge hit or it was going to be forgotten about in 2 weeks.
But it was deservedly a huge hit.
Because
that is so good. That is so... It's better than the movie.
And Cheyenne Jackson's thighs are magical. Magical.
Got to believe in magic.
I do, Cheyenne, I do.
But David Soul also found success as a singer. He achieved a number one hit in 1977 with this song.
Don't give up on us, baby.
Oh, I know this song. He sang this originally?
Yep.
The future isn't just one night. It's written in the moonlight.
I can't take any more.
No, I can't either.
But I found out in the mid-1990s, he moved to the United Kingdom and began a career there on the West End stage.
Okay.
And in 2004, he became a British citizen.
Who did he play?
He played in various shows. He's done various plays there.
All right, so nothing worth mentioning?
No. He was married 5 times and had 5 sons and a daughter. He was also a 3-pack-a-day cigarette smoker for 50 years. He had stopped 10 years ago due to his COPD. He also had a lung removed by cancer, due to cancer. But he died at age 80 in a London hospital on January 4th.
Okay, good for him.
Yeah. So I'd say he had quite a good career for himself.
I think 80 years of being David Soul's was probably a pretty nice existence.
I think so, too.
Yeah, good for him.
So to Glynis Johns and David Soul, rest in peace. Thank you for entertaining us. We now move on to our next segment. Today in history! And today in history, this happened back on January 10th in 49 BC.
Oh, dear.
It's where we get the saying crossing the Rubicon from.
Crossing the Rubicon.
Do you know what that phrase originated from?
Here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say it probably has something to do with Roman military installation.
Well, you're in the right ballpark.
Okay.
During the end of the late Roman Republic, there was a river called the Rubicon, which marked the boundary between this one Roman province of Gaul and Italy proper, which was controlled by Rome.
Okay.
To the south. And Julius Caesar, at that time, was a governor of the province of Gaul.
Carte, France.
Yes. And he was leading a troop to go to Rome.
Okay.
Because he was unsatisfied with how he was being treated. And the Roman law was that you were not permitted to cross the Rubicon with your troops. But he did.
Oh.
Yes, he did. So then...
Because he said, listen, I'm going to complain anyway. So just fucking add this to my check.
Anyway, this led to a civil war and eventually led to Julius Caesar becoming dictator of Rome or emperor.
So what was the deal about the Rubicon that you couldn't cross it, which you meant?
Well, that was the saying. You've crossed the Rubicon. You've reached that point of no return.
Yeah. You've gone too far.
Yep. And the saying that supposedly Caesar was attributed with saying, the die has been cast.
The die has been cast. Right.
Yep.
Okay.
So that happened today in 49 BC.
Good for Julie.
And then today in January 10th in 1776.
Oh.
Thomas Paine published a pamphlet. Do you know the name of that pamphlet?
Yeah, I do.
What is it?
Common Sense?
Common Sense is correct.
Yeah.
This was a pamphlet in which he advocated for complete independence from Great Britain.
Right.
At the time, many of the leaders of the revolution were hoping for reconciliation.
Yeah, they didn't want to do it.
They wanted to, you know, stay part of, you know, the British Empire, but still maintain their own form of government.
It was pretty cushy to be a main supplier to the British government at the time.
Yep. So Thomas Paine wrote this pamphlet and basically just blamed everything at King George III.
Right.
He published this anonymously at the time, which I didn't know, but it was distributed at taverns and meeting places, and at the time, it had the largest sale and circulation of any book published in American history.
Well, at that point, American history had been, like, what, 2 weeks?
Well, they had spread 100,000 copies in 3 months to 2 million residents of the 13 colonies. During the course of the Revolution, a total of about 500,000 copies were sold. As of 2006,
it's your propaganda right there.
Well, of course, that's exactly what it was advocating for, independence. So, yeah, that's the story of Common Sense, published today in 1776.
Published today.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, good for them.
Yeah. We now move on to our next segment.
What day is it? Could you please tell me? What day is it? How could you do that?
Yes, it's time for What Day Is It?
Kitty Litter Day.
No.
Oatmeal Cookie Day.
No.
Sea Mammals.
No. Okay. Today is National Houseplant Appreciation Day.
Okay.
Do you own any houseplants?
No, just me.
Just you?
Just me. I just sit
a shrinking violet.
Just sit in the corner, withering away.
Well, we have 4 houseplants.
Okay, how are they doing?
They're mostly doing well. I haven't killed any of them.
Okay,
usually I do. I have better luck with outdoor plants than indoor plants.
Well, outdoor plants, you know, it's you're getting a lot of help.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. So, okay, so International Houseplant Day.
Yes. Did you know that studies have shown that indoor plants can improve productivity and performance in the workplace and in school?
I believe that in every environment, they are beneficial.
They also say that, similar to outdoor gardening, indoor gardening can help to ease the symptoms of depression, anxiety, and dementia.
Mm.
In 1989, NASA published a study that showed that plants may improve the air quality for indoor spaces.
Okay, well, that makes sense.
Yeah, because they use carbon dioxide and release oxygen.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the more plants you have, the more effective they'll be at improving your air quality. Some plants that they recommend for this are Boston ferns, spider plants, ficus, rubber trees, and bamboo plants.
Bamboo? You gotta be careful with bamboo.
Well, I don't think you have to worry about it indoors. Outdoors is a different story.
Not if you keep it in a
spreads like
pot.
A weed. Yeah, but if you keep bamboo in a pot in your house, nothing's going to happen. Right. Outside spreads like a weed.
Yeah, it does. And it gets big and dense.
Yep.
Yeah.
So.
All right.
That's all about National Houseplant Appreciation Day.
Indoor plants.
But that's not all it is.
Okay.
It is also National Oysters Rockefeller Day.
Oh, right. I keep forgetting about specific recipes.
Have you ever eaten Oysters Rockefeller?
I have not.
Well, they originated at a restaurant called Antoine's in 1889. It was a recipe for baked oysters on the half shell with sauce and breadcrumbs.
Where was Antoine's?
I believe that was in New Orleans.
Okay.
And he said the dish was so rich that he knew of no other name rich enough for the richness.
Oh, hey.
Hence the name Oysters Rockefeller.
Okay. It could have been Vanderbilt, right?
But instead it's Rockefeller.
Rockefeller.
But this restaurant has served over 3.5 million orders of Oysters Rockefeller.
How many oysters come in an order?
Well, they number each order that they send out since they first started distributing them.
Since they farted,
yes.
All right.
So that's how they know how many they've sold.
No. How many oysters are in an oyster? A Rockefeller order.
I don't know.
If I order a Rockefeller oysters, what am I going to get? 3-4 oysters?
I don't know. Right. But I've never ordered them, so I don't know.
I'm just trying to get an idea of the scale of the environmental damage done by serving so much oysters. It's a lot of oysters.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Okay. So how many oysters did they sell? 300 million?
3.5 million.
3.5 million.
Since 1889.
3.5 million since 1889.
Yep.
That's not an awful lot.
For one restaurant, that is.
It's weird for one restaurant to be open that long.
Well, they obviously became very successful.
Yeah. Destroying wherever clams live. Where do they live? Like
in the sea.
In the sea, but is it like... Never mind.
We'll now move on to our next segment, wherein we take a look into my briefs. And this week, we take a look at Donald Trump.
Oh, wow.
You see, yesterday, his lawyers argued before the D.C. Court of Appeals that Trump should have immunity. And they basically argued that a president has immunity from criminal prosecution for acts committed during his presidency unless he was impeached and convicted by Congress.
But immunity for the rest of his life for any crime, amen.
Yes, unless he was impeached or convicted.
Right. So
for like any crime during his presidency.
Like they were asking, one of the judges said, so what if he takes SEAL Team Six
and uses them to assassinate a rival?
Yeah.
And he just basically said he would have to be impeached and convicted in the Congress first.
Yep.
Which is just bullshit. And I'm going to give you a good reason why that's bullshit. Gerald Ford and Richard Nixon.
Okay.
Because
I get it. Because that's the reason.
Gerald Ford pardoned Richard Nixon because he knew that Nixon could have been prosecuted for crimes.
Yeah, right.
But he wanted the country to move on.
Right. And people said it was a big mistake.
Well, of course, as people say, it cost him the election in 1976 then.
Probably did.
But that belies the whole premise of Trump's lawyers' arguments. Yes, they can be prosecuted for their crimes committed during their presidency. That sums it up right there.
Because they could have done it to Nixon.
Yeah,
you don't need a pardon unless you're afraid they're going to come after you for some shit. So, good for you, Patrick. You cracked that nut all by yourself.
Thank you very much.
The brilliant legal mind of Patrick Elizabeth Finn.
So that was a quick segment.
Okay.
We'll now move on to our next segment.
Oh, we have fascism this week.
Yes, it's time for the week in fascism. And this week, we go to our favorite fascist state, Florida.
Okay, never does wrong.
There's a school district down there in the Florida panhandle called the Escambia County School District.
Could you spell that?
Escambia.
Okay.
And it seemed that they have removed dictionaries from their library shelves because they would violate Florida law.
Okay.
Because Florida law gives residents the right to demand the removal of any library book that depicts or describes sexual conduct, whether or not the book is pornographic. So, because dictionaries will just give the definition of sex.
Well, and it's called a dictionary.
Exactly.
What about the Bible?
No mention of that, but not only did they remove dictionaries, they also remove 8 encyclopedias, 2 thesauruses, and 5 editions of the Guinness Book of World Records. Among other, this school district has removed over 2,800 books from its shelves. Among them are biographies of Beyonce, Lady Gaga, Oprah Winfrey, Nicki Minaj, and Thurgood Marshall. They've also removed books like Anne Frank's Diary of a Young Girl, The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, and Agatha Christie's Death on the Nile. 23 novels by Stephen King have been removed. They've even removed the right-wing not Bible, which is Atlas Shrugged. All right. That was removed as well. As well as 2 books written by Bill O'Reilly. So, a publisher, Penguin Random House, 5 authors, 2 parents, and a non-profit group called Pen America have sued the school district, alleging that the board has violated the First Amendment. In a brief submitted by the state of Florida, the attorney general argued that school boards can ban books for any reason because the purpose of public school libraries is to convey the government's message. And that can be accomplished through the removal of speech that the government disapproves.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Libraries are designed to spread the government message.
Wow.
That's the argument being made.
Who said that?
The Florida Attorney General.
Oof.
Yeah.
He's pretty high up. Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Yeah. Right? Unbelievable. You're removing dictionaries.
Well, it's, you know, now they're starting to say the quiet part out loud. And I don't even think they're meaning to. I think to them it's just like, well, yeah, of course.
I know.
Of course, the public library works for the government. That's why they call it public. No. I mean, public in this case is about the funding for the building and the collection.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
Oh, those people.
Fucking Florida, man.
Those people.
I feel very bad for them. I really do.
They're just, I think it's the heat.
It must be the heat or some red disease.
Also for this week in fascism, yesterday the Washington Post published an article reporting that there has been a major surge in violent threats against government officials.
Yeah.
They noted that last Wednesday, bomb threats forced evacuations, closures, or stepped-up security measures in Connecticut, Georgia, Kentucky, Michigan, Minnesota, Mississippi, Montana, Wisconsin, Hawaii, Maine, Oklahoma, Illinois, Idaho, South Dakota, Alabama, Alaska, Maryland, and Arizona.
Who'd you leave out?
I know, right? Jesus Christ.
All right.
Recently, the Maine Secretary of State and the Colorado Supreme Court have received a surge of threats.
Yeah, yeah.
After they were condemned by Trump in speeches because of their rulings against him, keeping him off the ballot. This past Sunday night, police responded to a swatting attempt at the home of Judge Chutkan, who's overseeing Trump's election subversion case in D.C.
Jack Smith, too.
Yep, Jack Smith on Christmas Day was a victim of swatting. And it's not only them. Marjorie Taylor Greene and Republican Congressman Brandon Williams were also targeted for swatting.
Okay.
But most of the threats have been aimed at those who oppose Trump.
Okay.
And one of the things in the article notes is that politicians have said that they have changed their votes out of fear for their family's safety.
Yeah.
And that people are now being discouraged from running for office because of all these death threats.
Now here's my thing. Where's the phone company? Do you know what I mean? Like, how could somebody knows?
Well, assuming there are any payphones out there, maybe they're calling from a payphone.
Oh, I don't thoroughly understand what a burner is.
A burner phone? I guess it's a phone you can't trace. I don't know all the technology.
It just seems to me that to make them untraceable, maybe it's a civil rights issue. Like, you know, it just seems to me like somebody has a record of that phone call being made. So I don't understand. I don't understand why this is so difficult to control. I don't know. I mean, it's horrible.
Yeah, it is horrible.
It's a waste of resources. It's Karen calling the cops on the bird watcher in the park. You know, it's taking people away from their jobs so that they can attend to you being nonsensical. Yeah, I don't like it.
No.
But I don't understand why it's not something that we could do something about. It's a technology thing, I think.
I guess. I don't know. I don't know. I wish I had an answer on that.
Yeah.
It's just a shame, you know?
It is a shame. It's intrusive, and I'm sure it's scary.
Of course. You know, now you got to worry about your families because you're doing your job, you know?
Horrible.
It is horrible.
On Christmas Day. That Jack Smith, though, that man is, A, not fucking around, and, two, sees the goal and knows he's making moves. And I don't know anything about law or certainly not legal strategy, but it seems to me like he is a step ahead of the game every step of the way.
Yeah.
He knows what the next move is going to be, and he's ready.
I mean, last week they just made available evidence about Trump's actions or basically inactions during the whole time that the insurrection was occurring.
And they're going to
use that as evidence of his criminal intent.
But that was from people who were inside the White House.
Yeah,
those were the people who observed him, who were working for him, who have been diehard supporters. And how long ago did that happen, Jack? Like, when did you get that? When was that deposition? But you're releasing it now, and why?
Yeah.
I think the man is a fucking genius. I think he knows exactly the case. I think he knows exactly how this case is going to move.
Oh, yeah.
He's amazing. He just amazes me.
Anyway, so that's it for the week in fascism.
All right.
We now move on to our next segment. Yes, it's time for We Like to Watch. And what did you watch this week, Tommy?
Okay, well, last night, I will tell you this, or rather this morning.
Okay.
I fell into a rabbit hole.
Uh-oh.
That I don't think I've laughed out loud.
Okay.
In probably months, and by myself, probably years. That I've been, but, well, you know, depending upon what I'm doing. What is her name on What's His Name's show?
Oh, that'd be more vague, please.
Okay, I'm going to try. The English guy.
Oh, okay, that narrows it down. We know he's English. We know.
Miriam is the woman's name. Okay, so hold on. Miriam, Miriam type. Because this is Rupert. No, it's not Rupert Murdoch. What the fuck is the guy's name? He's on. He's RuPaul calls him a national treasure. Graham Norton.
Graham Norton. Okay.
Has this regular on. Okay. And her name is Miriam. I don't know.
Okay.
Miriam something. And she's this, you know, older woman. Old woman. And she's fucking hilarious. And she just says the most inappropriate things. And she, but she's she's just fucking hilarious. And I fell down a Rupert. It's not Rupert Holmes.
Graham Norton.
Graham Norton. And then I just kept like the 100 greatest Graham Norton impressions. You know, people who come on and do impressions.
Yep.
He is so funny.
Yeah, his show is great. I love watching
his show. The show is great.
Love watching it.
I don't know where it is. Probably HBO because I can't find it. Like
it's, or BBC America maybe. I don't know.
Oh, maybe.
I always catch the reruns on YouTube.
Yeah, that's why I call it a rabbit hole,
because yeah.
There's no rabbit hole in the world like YouTube. So yeah, I did that, and then I watched a movie.
Ooh.
I know.
What movie did you watch?
Saltburn.
We just watched it last night.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, we can talk about that.
I watched Saltburn. Well, that could be an opportunity.
How did you like it?
It was okay. It was very much like, well, it struck me as sort of a 6 degrees of separation type plot. Like this outsider sort of focuses on this group of people, in this case, this family.
Yeah.
They invite him in. They make him one of their own. And then one by one they all disappear. Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I thought it was his hiney at the end was beautiful.
Oh, Barry Keoghan.
Yeah, the dance at the end. Barry Keoghan from what you call that movie?
The Banshees of Inisherin.
Banshees of Inisherin. Yeah, so I saw that.
I really liked the movie.
Okay, it was good. It was a good movie.
That bathtub scene.
Yeah.
Oh my, that was a little like, wow.
It was a lot. It was a lot.
Yeah, I wasn't. And that, and also the grave scene. I wasn't expecting that either.
Yeah.
That was like, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, Barry Keoghan goes all out in this role. He really does.
Yeah.
I don't know many actors who would do what he did in this movie.
It's hard to blame him. I mean, the guy was hot.
Yeah, but he's a good actor. I mean, this is like the second major role he's had. And he's an excellent actor.
Isn't this the kid, he comes from fucking nowhere?
Yeah.
Like, bad in school.
Yeah, exactly. He came from poverty or whatever. He was an orphan, I think.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
And now he's like one of the hottest young actors coming up now.
He was really good in this.
Yeah.
And his hiney.
Nice hiney. Although I like the other guy, too. I wish we saw more of him.
Yeah. Me, too. But no.
And also, I got to say, Barry Keoghan is also well endowed.
I wouldn't know.
In the dance scene, when he's dancing naked.
I kept looking and thought.
Oh, they showed him quite well.
Okay.
I was like, impressive. Okay. Impressive.
Okay. I may have to go back and take a second. Because I have found that the internet as a whole just doesn't have enough content. There's not enough penis content on the internet. So I'll go back and look for his.
Go back and look for his.
I'm sure it must be a
special one. On Prime Video, by the way. It
must be a special one. Yeah, so that was pretty cool. I liked that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that.
What else did you watch?
What else did we watch? This funny movie, little independent film. Actually, they get Neil deGrasse Tyson to give the introduction to it.
Okay, I love him.
It's called Future 38.
Okay.
It's a comedy.
Okay.
It depicts basically what they call a recently discovered 1938 sci-fi film.
All right.
Which has someone from 1938 traveling to 2018, which is when this movie came out. So you're seeing the 1938 depiction of what 2018 would look like. Like I said, they made the whole thing from beginning to end. It's hysterical.
When did they make it?
They made this like 2017, 2018.
Okay.
But they said they created this whole fake movie and then this whole thing in the 2018, and then you see what they vision the future as.
That's funny.
It's very funny. Sean Young, of all people, appears in this movie as a telephone operator.
I don't know who that is.
Sean Young, Blade Runner.
You could say his name louder. She
makes sense. She's like probably the biggest name star in it.
Oh, it's a she?
Yeah, she's a she.
What's her name?
Sean Young.
Okay.
But funny movie that was also on Prime Video.
What's definitely it called?
Future 38.
Yeah, I would never, I would like
that. I saw the title and I looked at the description. I'm like, this sounds perfect for me right now. And it was. It was very funny.
Okay.
Really was.
Where was it? Netflix?
That was on, no, Prime Video.
Crime, okay.
Yep. That was all we watched this week, that and Saltburn.
Yeah, Saltburn was cute.
Yeah, that was a big thumbs up on that one. So I guess then we'll move on to our next segment.
God, Karen, you are so stupid.
Yes, yeah, time for some stupid people. And I had to put this in even though it occurred last week. Donald Trump.
Okay, that's not where I thought you were going. Go ahead. I have my own.
Oh, you have to bring up your own after this. But Donald Trump was at a rally last weekend talking about the Civil War. This is what he said. The Civil War was so fascinating, so horrible. So many mistakes were made. See, there was something I think could have been negotiated, to be honest with you. I think you could have negotiated that. All the people died. So many people died. You know, that was a disaster. Then he added on Abraham Lincoln, of course. If he negotiated it, you probably wouldn't even know who Abraham Lincoln was. Okay. Now, if you look at the actual history, they did try to negotiate before war broke out. In fact, Lincoln offered to let them keep slavery in the existing states, but he wouldn't allow it to spread to any new states that entered into the Union.
See, now that's one of the things.
And the South opposed it, so that's how war broke out.
Lincoln was not entirely altruistic from the very beginning.
Oh, if you look at his speeches when he ran, he gave different speeches in different states, depending on what region he's in.
He made a commitment, went with the commitment, and then opened doors that would never have, you know.
At one point, he supported the idea of transporting all the slaves overseas. To their own place, like Liberia.
The islands.
Yeah.
Monrovia is one where they landed.
Yeah.
That's why it's called Monrovia.
Right.
Yeah, so he was a man of political expediency, and he was an expert at that, and that's what he did. And he did the right thing at the right time, and that's why he is who he is, but it wasn't completely
Like I said, it wasn't like they just went into war. They did try to negotiate this.
There were things he was willing to give up. Among them, the freedom of the slaves.
Yeah.
His goal was keeping the union.
That was his goal.
Under any circumstances.
Yeah. He was willing to go that far, but he didn't, you know. Well, the South rejected it.
He wasn't. His goal was not the end of slavery. Until it was. But the initial goal was keeping the unification of the Union.
Because people forget, even when he announced the Emancipation Proclamation, freeing all the slaves, that only applied to the slaves in the states in the Confederacy. It did not apply to the slaves in the states that stayed in the Union.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting history because there's so much, oh, really?
About right? it. Yeah, yeah, exactly. But Donald Trump, of course, has the history all fucking wrongs. The only thing I'm surprised he didn't say was, if I'd lived back then, I could have negotiated the Civil War.
Well, that's what he meant.
That's what I was waiting for, you know?
You know, he could prevent another civil war because he would negotiate us out of it.
Yeah.
That's his whole thing, is that, you know, you count on me. I'm a negotiator.
Who's your nominee for stupid person this week?
Oh, it's got to be the Boberts.
Oh, my God.
She is...
They get into a fight. He gets arrested.
He calls the police claiming spousal abuse, domestic assault.
Yeah.
She has punched him full out twice, and then just continued to beat upon him. He gets arrested. Why did he get arrested? Anyway, it don't matter.
It doesn't matter. And this is on top of her flipping districts now to run in a different district for election, and she's getting shit for that.
How is that allowed?
You know, I live in the district.
I hope District 4 says fuck you. I hope to God District 4 just says fuck you.
Yeah, it's time for her to go down in flames.
Because that is insulting to District 3. It's just as insulting to District 4.
Yeah.
And who does she think she? Oh my God, she's
all about just cleaning the power like the rest of them.
It's a sense of entitlement. She can jerk off boyfriend in the third row of a theater on the aisle. No, honey, you gotta do that under the balcony in the middle of a row. Everybody knows that. Anyway.
So I guess that's enough for stupid people this week.
Is it? Because there's more.
Oh, you thought of more?
Give me a second. Give me my phone. Can we talk about the custodian who videotaped himself and then posted it of himself having sex in the school?
No, I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, it's him. That's right here on Long Island.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's pretty stupid.
Half Hollow Hills. Half Hollow Hills District School custodian accused of soliciting sex in live stream, exposing himself on school grounds.
Oh my God.
Police say. Yeah.
My brother taught there.
Did he?
Yeah.
What did he teach?
Health. He was a health teacher and soccer coach.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I bet he could have helped in that video. He could have narrated it. Oh. What's your brother's name?
Tommy.
Tommy Finn?
Yep.
Thomas
Joseph. No, George.
George. Okay.
All right.
Okay.
So, good to thing. The stupid people we've just talked about.
Stupid! Not you, Tommy. So stupid! Tommy's not stupid.
No, he's not.
I don't know. He might be stupid.
No, he's not.
I don't know.
He's not.
He was a health teacher. You gotta know health.
Of course. Julie Andrews, take us away!
Raindrops on roses. And whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
How many takes you think? I don't know. It's not like they did it with the orchestra in the room. I'm sure they did the orchestra, and then they did her, and then they put it together, and then they added the thunder. I'm sorry, go ahead.
That's okay.
So, five favorites.
We're up to five faves.
What are they this week?
Today's category is to name our five favorite TV talk show hosts.
Oh, okay. I got to be honest with you. In the 80s and the early 90s,
okay,
it was all about the fucking talk shows.
Yeah, they had some great ones.
All about the talk shows. What do we got? Oh, we got
little, thank you, Steven. Steven has brought in donuts.
Balls of chocolatey stuff. Rosie O'Donnell.
Rosie O'Donnell, okay.
I loved that talk show. I thought she was charming and adorable, and what she did in terms of Broadway was nobody else has done that.
Fair enough. I'm going to go with someone that you just mentioned before, Graham Norton.
Oh, yeah.
Great talk show host. Wow. Oh, my God. I love the atmosphere. It's totally relaxed. They have drinks going and stuff.
The audience is lit.
Yeah. It's just fun, you know?
It is fun.
Johnny Carson.
It really is.
His
Johnny Carson's a god. We shouldn't even bother naming him.
His laugh. He had somebody on one of the things I watched where he had impersonations, people doing impersonations, and he had somebody doing impersonations of him.
Oh God.
Which was dead on. It's so funny.
It is. It's such a great
show. Yeah, he's a great show.
Do you remember him in the movie, Another Gay Movie?
No.
Oh, my God. There's a scene in there. I'll just say Belgian chocolate.
Okay.
Look for the scene.
Somehow I have a feeling if I Google Belgian chocolate, I'm going to end up...
Well, Google Another Gay Movie and Belgian chocolate.
Okay.
Who's your number two choice?
Talk show hosts. Oprah.
Oprah! You like Oprah,
Oprah had a damn good talk show.
Okay.
Oprah had a good talk show.
I didn't really watch... My mother watched Oprah.
Yeah.
She always said her name wrong. She always said Oprah Winfrey.
That's funny.
It's always Oprah Winfrey.
Did she have a vogue? A brogue?
Nope. She just always said the name wrong.
All right.
Oprah Winfrey.
That's hysterical. Oprah.
So my number two choice has to be Dick Cavett.
It has to be.
Dick Cavett was probably the smartest talk show host I've ever seen.
Okay.
I mean, he had such a variety of guests on of all kinds.
Right.
And could actually have intellectual conversations on his show.
With the smart ones.
Yeah.
With the stupid ones, he would just let them, you know, do whatever they do.
Well, he did one of the worst interviews he said he ever did, like watching it, it's terrible, it was with George Harrison. George Harrison was like so non-communicative at all during it.
Yeah.
And of course, there's a famous clip with Norman Mailer, which Norman Mailer appeared on the show drunk.
Okay.
And he was fighting with Gore Vidal. And at one point, then he started it with Dick Cavett. He's like, just read your cards.
Oh, God.
And Dick Cavett's like, how about I just fold this card up and shove it where the sun don't shine? A great clip. Look for that on YouTube also.
Yeah. That and Chocolate. Chocolate Denmark.
Belgian chocolate.
Oh, Belgian chocolate. God, could you imagine if I were to put in chocolate belt? Well, never mind.
Who's your number three choice?
It's a toss up here because there were so many really good trashy ones. Like knee deep, some of them.
I have a trashy one on my list.
But I'm going to go with Jerry.
Jerry Springer.
Jerry.
Yeah. The Ringmaster.
Yeah.
He really was. He was the ringmaster.
Former mayor of Cleveland, Ohio.
No, well, I thought it was Cincinnati.
It was one of them.
Yeah.
Good. What, tell me the difference, figuring weight for age. The difference between Cincinnati mm-hmm. and whatever I said.
Columbus, I think.
No, that doesn't say that.
Okay.
Never mind. So, yeah, Jerry Springer. Plus, okay. he had an opera written after him. Which is fucking brilliant, by the way.
Yes, it is. It's hysterical.
You know, somebody produced that son of a bitch because it's hysterical.
Yeah, it really is.
And, you know, you want to talk about it being a representation of what it satires. It's perfect.
Yeah. Oh, without a doubt.
It has all the elements.
Without a doubt.
All right, so Jerry Springer. Go ahead.
My third choice is Jerry Springer times 10. That would be Morton Downey Jr.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. The trashiest talk show there ever was on
TV, I think he
would be perfect today on Fox News Channel.
He was so aggressive.
Yeah, he really was. Non-stop smoking on the show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Picking fights with people. Yeah. And the whole audience was just...
They weren't always on his side, though.
Most of the time they were.
They were, but he was brutal. He was too much.
Yeah.
All right, so now I'm going to go late night.
Okay.
And David.
I have David Letterman on my list also. You have to have Letterman.
At the time, he was a cultural, and he made a cultural shift. He was a big deal. David Letterman and that show was a big deal.
Yeah. So. I mean, he made, like, The Tonight Show look stale in comparison to what he was doing on his show, you know? Like, the college kids, never mind The Tonight Show, we'll wait for Letterman to come on.
Right.
You know?
It was that late night time slot that post. To tell you the truth, I don't know if it's common knowledge or if I'm making it up. He wanted Johnny Carson's job.
Oh, yeah.
He wanted that show.
Yep, and got screwed out of it.
And when they put him on late night, he found the perfect niche because he wasn't competing.
Yeah. He was competing against Jay Leno at that point.
Well, no, he did some years. He did some years. The very early years were against Johnny Carson.
No, I don't think. Well, no, he has 12:30 show then.
That's what I'm talking about.
He wasn't against Carson.
No, he wasn't. I don't mean against after.
But after that, that's when he was supposed to get the Tonight Show.
Right,
he thought he was. He had Johnny's blessing.
And then
Leno got it.
Leno got it.
So he left, and then CBS hired him.
Right, but I'm talking about that original couple of years at NBC.
Right, that was a 12:30 show.
The 12:30 show.
Yeah.
That show, to me, is... what David Letterman was.
Yeah, exactly. I agree, without a doubt.
The show was fucking hilarious.
It was. It was great.
So stupid. All of the time.
Yep.
That stupid thing he would do.
Introduce Larry Bud Melman.
Oh, God.
Remember him?
I'm thinking right now of him like making the knot of his tie move by using his jacket lapels. He would just move, shift them up and down, and his tie would move. And he'd look in the camera fascinated by them. I loved him. Thought he was fucking hilarious.
All right, so that's number three for both of us.
No, that was four. David Letterman was four.
You said?
I said Rosie.
Rosie.
I said?
Oprah.
Oprah. I said Jerry Lewis.
Jerry Springer.
I said...
Oh, and now David Letterman was number four, which is my number four
now
also.
It's you for number four.
So now we're on number five.
And we're going back to number five. And you got to go where you got to go. If you talk about talk show hosts, top five, Johnny Carson needs a spot in the top five.
Johnny Carson, he's like the god of talk show.
Oh, we're stipulating Johnny Carson?
Yeah, let's stipulate on that. I wouldn't even care. He's a god of the talk show.
Okay, then let me have a Sally Jesse Raphael.
You like Sally Jesse, huh?
Yeah, comparatively speaking, you know, she was on in that odd hour when nobody else was on, that sort of pre-Oprah. Let me see if I can come up with somebody else better while I'm just babbling. Sally was all right. Sally was a mess.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll land there.
Okay.
Sally Jesse Raphael.
Well, I do have a fifth choice, but I do have two honorable mentions.
Okay.
They're both ones that I grew up with, but one especially, because my mom loved it, was... The Dinah Shore Show.
Okay, Dinah Shore. Yeah.
Every afternoon, had to watch Dinah.
Dinah Shore.
She was great, you know. She had a little country living room set or whatever.
The same woman became Oprah 20 years later. Right. And then, okay.
I grew up with Dinah.
Dinah.
And I also have to mention the inimitable Joe Franklin.
if you feel like you need to.
Come on, you gotta mention Joe.
Oh no, I know who I want to mention.
Who do you want to mention?
I know who I want to mention. Can I go back? No, let's hear your fifth first.
My fifth? Stephen Colbert.
Oh, I love Stephen Colbert.
I think he does a bang-up job on his show. He really does. Even with guests that he doesn't always agree with, he has good conversations with them, you know? He's a smart host. He really is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like him a lot.
He's super smart.
Yeah.
And is super talented.
Very.
He's one of many children, like one of 10 children.
Yeah.
Raised Catholic.
Yeah.
And he's...
he's a devout Catholic,
He's young of the 10. Like, he's not the first two or three.
He's at the bottom.
Six or seven. I'm not... I don't know for sure. I have always loved Stephen Colbert. I loved his character on the... on Late Night. Not Late Night. On the... on what?
John's show. On the Colbert Show,
No, before the Colbert Show, he was on the show with Jon Stewart.
Well, he was on The Daily Show.
The Daily Show.
Stop. But then he had his own parody of, like, the Fox opinion shows called The Colbert Show.
But that was all on The Daily Show.
That came after The Daily Show.
That was spun off
after, yes.
I loved that character.
Yeah, me too.
I thought he was great. I have a hard time seeing him not be that character, although... I never watch him that I don't enjoy myself. I don't seek it out, but I never watch him that he doesn't make me smile.
I always watch, usually the day after, I'll watch his opening monologue, because he's always got a good opening monologue.
Yeah, his monologue is good.
Right?
Who was the guy who did the show on PBS with the actors?
Oh, you mean inside the actor studio?
Yeah.
I can't think of his name. Let's see if we can find it. He was classic.
Yeah, I'd rather do him than Sally Jesse, because I think Sally Jesse is sort of covered in the chasm between Oprah and Jerry Springer. Like, she falls somewhere in that.
Go inside
the actor's studio with Rupert. No, that was the last segment. Robert.
James Lipton.
James Lipton.
He was the host.
I like James Lipton. He was dry.
Oh, God.
But you have to see people like Robin Williams when presented with that type of...
Oh, yeah.
Robin Williams at any time. It's not fair to mention him. But James Lipton is as dry as they come.
Oh, my God,
When he had people on who were extremely big personalities...
Yeah.
He somehow managed to inspire... I don't want to say inspire them, but like... instigate them.
Yeah. He got him to talk.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I liked
him. He got him to talk about things that he probably ordinarily don't talk about on interviews.
Who was the guy who had the really round table that was lit from the top? There was nothing. He was in the blackness with the round table. It was on PBS, I think. Round table, wood, very shiny.
I have no idea.
I want to say Charles Wallace, but I don't know if there's ever such a person.
No, I never heard of such a person.
Charlie, I think he ended up being one of those My Too people. Me Too. He was accused in the Me Too thing.
Oh, yeah, I know who you're talking about, yeah.
On PBS, he did the Charlie Walters Hour. Charlie Winters.
Charlie Rose.
Charlie Rose.
Charlie Rose.
Yeah. All right, yeah, so go ahead.
Okay. You sure now?
No, but let's go. Let's try.
We now move on to our final segment of the
really?
Evening. Yes.
Well, I could go on forever.
We know.
Get off my lawn.
Oh.
Did you hear me? I said get off my lawn now.
Yes, it's time for the grumpy old game and gripe of the week.
All right, I'm going to be really petty.
Okay, be really petty.
When you're in line to pay for something,
yes.
Before you get up to the cash register, to the person, to make the deal, have your payment method ready. I am sick of sitting behind people who got to search for where their wallet is, and then they got to search for where in their pocketbook, and they're taking shit out and giving it to their necklace herd around them to hold while they look for their fucking wallet so they can find their car. You have time to do that. You're in line. You know it's coming. It's the only possible thing that you can do while standing in that line is prepare.
But no, you don't.
To pay. No. You wait until the last fucking... And then they... Well, I can't even say start bagging. Maybe that's where it comes from. Because after they would ring it up, then they'd have to bag it. So it was in that time, I suppose,
yeah,
that they would go looking for their payment method.
I guess.
Have the payment... Have the payment method ready. Okay. Just have it ready. Just,
yes.
I don't want, why I got a cert? Why? No, have it ready. You're, especially if you're in a line. You know, if you run up, grab a cup of coffee in the 7-Eleven, rush over to the counter and, oh shit, hold on. And that's one thing. But if you're standing in a line 3-4 people back, you know you're going to need that money.
Damn right.
Go get it. Ahead of time. You're wasting my time. Searching for something, you do, you need it.
You can always go to the self-checkout, you know.
Yeah, don't you always have to now?
Not always, no.
But even those, you gotta wait for after she rings everything in and makes sure it's on the completely insufficient scale where you're supposed to put all your stuff. Fuck you, places like CVS. They sell me these gigantic things. They give me this little scale. Okay. What am I... Okay. Whatever. Yeah, the whole checking out process, let's just say. I don't like it.
Okay.
I don't like people who know that they have to pay and then wait till the last minute to get their payment option ready.
Okay.
Go ahead.
My gripe? Drivers, this is Long Island. This is not Queens. You cannot double park on fucking Long Island. I am so sick of these vehicles that think they can just double park in a road so they can get out and, oh, I have to go get Chinese food. Go fucking park somewhere.
Okay, hold on.
What?
I can't find my nicotine. Okay, I found it. Now go ahead, continue, because I needed nicotine to address this. Go ahead.
But we see people all the time parking, double parking, like it's okay now.
Parking in no parking things. Like
that too. Malls. You're parking where they shouldn't be parking.
Yeah. Just because I'm going to run into the Chinese place, pick it up, and then I rush back out.
Yeah.
I'm going to leave my kid and my dog in the car and rush over there and get it and come back out.
Not only that, we have this one shopping plaza over here by us. There's this one exit way, and it says, one entrance way, and it says, do not use as an exit at the top of it.
Right.
And it's a little bit of an incline, and we go up it, and sure enough, this car comes whizzing around the corner to exit that way. We're like, you see the sign there? What the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, but that's not double parking.
No, but it's right up there. People just don't obey the rules of the road anymore. Okay. You know? So see, the double parking's the worst.
Double parking, okay.
I'm sick of it.
You're sick of it, Patrick. Enough.
I used to see it in Queens all the time when I went to law school in Queens.
In Queens, you have no choice. In Queens, it's sort of figured into the equation.
I know.
So that's why you opened with, this is not Queens, this is Long Island,
yep.
No double parking.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty tight-ass. That's a pretty good one.
Thank you.
Yeah. As a person who has double parked numerous times, many occasions, you know, it's never, I'm unloading for, I got screamed at by some guy because I double parked and he came in, I walked out of the theater. I was bringing stuff in for the theater. So when I'm like, you know, the hazard lights are on, the back, what's that called? That back door, that
back entrance
of the
freight entrance
of the, no, shut up. Of the car, of the, it's an SUV, so that back, you know,
right.
Is open all the way up. Lights are flashing, and I, you know, I'm in and out. And he comes in, he's yelling at the 16-year-old girl who was with me.
Okay.
And I was like, bitch, what are you? And then Blanger 40 walks out. Blanger 40, ex-New York City police detective.
Yeah.
I turn around, I raise my hands, I'm going to step over here. Because right now, I know he's at least on my side. I know him.
Yes.
He may find that I'm wrong and come at me, but I know him. So I know he's gonna take this situation over from this guy, who I really don't want to deal with anyway, because he's obviously a lunatic. He was just yelling at the 16-year-old girl, who, by the way, you and Steven both would be afraid of, that she would kick your ass down to the ground if you worked together to oppose her. She's not somebody to fuck around with, okay? But she's 16 years old, and this man should not have been yelling at her.
Okay.
She wasn't driving. But yeah, so yeah.
Doesn't excuse your double parking.
The double park. No. Of course it doesn't. On the other hand, go fuck yourself. I'm going to be out in a second. Relax. Where are you going?
You're blocking traffic.
I'm not. No.
Yeah, you are.
No.
Yeah, you are.
Not if I'm on Railroad Avenue where it goes by the theater there and then it's sort of lean
it's
back.
It's one lane each way.
Yeah, but
you double park there, you got to stop. You got to wait. Yeah.
You're wrong.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, you are.
I see it all the time.
Well, that's because you're you. But if you pull up the handicap spot along that little stretch of Wellwood Avenue when you can park where you park parallel to the curb instead of on an angle in it.
Uh-huh.
Okay, that little space there where you could park that 6 or 10 spots. The handicap space is right in front of theater.
Okay,
and it's the last spot before you have to start parking that weird way into the. Okay, so if I double park next to any of those spaces in that one little area, okay. I'm not blocking traffic.
Yeah, you are.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, you are.
If I wait to pull into the parking spot, that weird angle parking that you have to do 10 spots further down, now I'm waiting for this motherfucker to pull out so I can take that spot in front of the pizzeria or whatever.
Waiting for another spot is one thing. Double parking is totally different.
I'll tell you what, I have never seen anybody double park along that stretch where you can't get past.
I have.
All right. Well, you know, you are, I guess, the parking fucking fairy. I don't know what to tell you. I agree that double parking is inconvenient.
Yes.
I'm guilty of doing it.
Yes, you are.
Yes, I am. So, yeah. All right. So,
okay.
Don't double park.
Don't double park.
But if you have to for just a second, like, what the fuck
does this mean? No! This brings us to the conclusion.
Someday, you're going to need to let, well, not you.
What?
Your husband's going to need to drop you off at the ER.
Okay.
Okay? Probably as a result of something that he has done.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
He's going to hit you, or he's going to poison you, or he's going to arrange for you to have a fall. Something. There's ground up glass in your mesh, but something.
Yes.
He's he may have second thoughts. He may just not want to clean up after it, but he's going to take you to, and when he takes you to the emergency room, you're going to not want him to wait to find a parking spot. You're going to say, fucking double park in front of the doors and let me out. Or double park and let them come get me.
Well, am I able to ambulate on my own at this point?
You're pretty sick.
Oh, okay.
I mean, if you're sick, you got your eyes closed and you're groaning. And if you're physically injured, you're no threat to anybody. No, because he's going to go right for your joints.
Well, you're describing an emergency situation there. Most double parking does not involve emergency situations.
But in case it does, will there be an exception for those emergencies?
Yes, for emergencies.
Okay, so now we have to define emergencies, and I am not of the fortitude right now.
Nor am I to
what those might be. Okay, so let's just say that we had a good session, and we're open to negotiations.
Yes,
and we'll let you know how things progress.
And I hope we had enough conflict to satisfy Stephen Wagner.
You know, I do love Stephen Wagner. And I love that comment. It was funny because even that night I was like, that was like sort of rote.
It was a mellow.
It was mellow. Episode, it was mellow. Know. It was mellow. Tonight was pretty mellow.
Yeah, but we covered some good topics.
I don't know. Stephen Wagner with his fucking opinions. And I like how he just, like how he adds his top five.
Yes.
I love that. Yes. I wish Michelle would do that. I wish the other two people who listen would do that. Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yes, it
would. Top five. Okay. What was tonight's topic? Top five?
Favorite TV show, talk show hosts.
Talk show hosts. Okay. Yeah, I nailed that one.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, that was good.
We now come to the conclusion of this week's episode.
It was fast.
Yes, it was.
What time is it?
It's early. It's only 10 o'clock.
Holy shit.
Right? You'll be home before you know it.
Well, I know it now.
Anyway, we want to thank my husband and producer, Stephen Prendergast, for making dinner and bringing in donuts for us.
And you know what he does, which is adorable?
What's
that? He brings in all of my necessary beverages.
Yes. He's very good
at that. So when I came in and there's the wine opened.
Yep.
With a glass next to it. My replenish zero.
Of course.
My tea.
See, you're all set. He's very good.
I think I may have had my replenish zero. No, it was definitely here. He did it. And I came in with the bourbon.
Yes, you did.
So, and then there was the tea, which Stephen did, and he lined it all up. It was
yep, like he's a very good producer.
Yeah, he was good at that.
Yes.
He did that. And he moved his laptop out of the way, which is...
That's a very smart thing to do with you around.
That's like OSHA. You know, you got to make sure that shit is taken care of. So, all right, so what else?
So, don't forget, you can find all of our episodes on our website, www.grumpyoldgaymenandtheirdogs.com.
Hold on. If they're listening,
yes,
they have already found a way to listen.
Yes. Let's say they want to go back to hear an earlier episode. Then they would have to go to the website.
Do people do that?
Are you kidding me? This past weekend, someone from Ohio downloaded like 35 episodes. Not Ohio, Oregon.
30? Well, there's nothing to do in Oregon. I mean,
okay.
It's January in Oregon. It's like that. If you start at the border.
Yes.
If you go from the border between America and Canada.
Okay.
And follow it.
Yes.
And go 300 miles out on either side. And just follow the border. And yes. That 300 miles on both sides. So that's 600 miles.
Yes.
Okay. Follow it all the way up. All those people, it's too cold now. They have nothing else to do. It is too fucking cold.
So they're listening to our podcast.
Snow up the ass.
Our podcast is keeping them warm.
Well, it's melting the snow. So it's, I don't know, it's whatever it is, but they got nothing else to do. It's.
And of course, you can follow our posts on Facebook as well.
Oh, yeah, Facebook.
Yeah. So that's about it. Anything exciting happening for you this coming week?
Well, my vacation. Sorry. It's funny when I say vacation because it wasn't a vacation.
Okay.
Like, I didn't do anything.
Yes.
But I didn't go anywhere. I didn't get paid for the time off. I didn't, you know, enjoy myself. I didn't go see, but I had time off and I didn't work, so which means I didn't get paid. So,
of course.
So work starts again this week. And from what I understand, there's not a weekend free from this weekend, from this coming weekend,
yeah,
at least until June.
Wow.
That's fucking crazy.
You're going to be busy.
That's not even, that's rentals, that's every weekend.
Yeah.
That's every
insane.
Weekend. Yeah, it's insane. No, it's crazy. And it's good because you got that fucking building there, you better put some masses in it.
Right.
You know, there's something, you better do it. So yeah, so that's what's coming up for me is I'm going to be there all the time.
Cool. Well,
until they get rid of me.
Stephen and I will be right down the block from you because we're going to be going to the opening of Vanya and Sonia. Masha and Spike at the South Shore Theater Experience. No, I do not.
Fuck, I don't know that play.
I know of it, but I don't know exactly what it's about or anything.
I want to read it so badly, but I don't want to pay for it. So,
well, then come see the play.
I was hoping you. I want to read it. I like to read it.
Yes, I understand that. I do the same thing.
I'd like to see it. First of all, the cast is freaking amazing. She got Jason in there. Jason Moreland can do no wrong.
Yep. Debbie Pleasey is Debbie. Her son Teddy.
Teddy, who I didn't know until I did.
And Meredith Spencer's in it. You know Meredith.
Do I?
Meredith Reardon Spencer. You know Meredith. She's done plenty of shows at studio.
Okay, I don't know for sure.
Yeah.
You refuse to remember. I'm not involved in the production. At Studio Theater.
You're in the theater community. You should know everybody.
I'm over there in the corner.
Yeah.
With the coffee.
You're directing for me this coming season, so you're in the community.
I'm in the community. The same way, you know, who's the unemployed guy in the opening of Fiddler? What, so you had a bad week, so I should suffer? Anyway, never mind. It all comes back to musical theater.
Yes, it does.
Everything I learned. Do you know what I want to stage? I want to do outside. I guess it would be the opening of My Fair Lady.
Okay.
Okay? When she is outside Covent Garden.
Yes.
Selling the flowers.
Yes.
So she's at the bottom.
Yes.
This is the filthiest we see her.
Yes.
Evidently something at Covent Garden, an event lets out.
Yes.
And which gives her all of these people to sell to and to sing to and to be poor. I would like to see in that crowd all of the theater people, all of the theater characters who were alive in London at that time.
Okay.
Like it would be Sweeney Todd. Like Sweeney Todd and fucking Mrs. Lovett walk across and they refuse to give her money. Or like, what's his name?
They give her a pie.
The detective. Who?
They give her a pie.
You know, so all of the characters from like, that time period, because it's a really, like, fertile time period.
Yes,
London in that time period, that late Victorian Edwardian social aristocracy thing takes up a lot of theater space. So I just like would like to see how that would play, because they're not incongruous.
No.
But they're kind of wrong. Like, I can't even think of who else would be in that scene.
I don't know.
Stephen Wagner will.
Yes.
Okay, bye.
On that note, we'll say have a good night, have a good week, have a good life, and we'll see you next time.
Bye, bitches.
Da 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 da.